This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit Progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for the Memory Palace comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/memory. That's odoo.com/memory.
A content warning: this episode deals with and depicts a suicide. This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. On the afternoon of March 14th, 1932, George Eastman asked his doctor and nurses to give him a moment. They were there for a routine check-in, as they were most days then. Eastman was 77. His health had been declining for years. He had a condition that was most likely spinal stenosis, a degenerative narrowing of the sheath that holds the spinal nerves. But his doctors didn't know to call it that then. Didn't entirely understand just what was causing Eastman so much pain. Just that it had been bad for nearly a decade at that point. That it had gotten worse. And that it would only get worse from here on out. His friends knew it too. They certainly didn't have to be doctors to see it. They had noticed when he started to walk slowly, and then with the shuffle, then with his foot dragging. And when he couldn't walk at all, that was hard to watch. His closest friends, people who would go with him to hear music or come hang out at his house, the grand one he'd built on East Avenue in Rochester, New York, where he'd had tall trees planted so he could sit out on the front porch and not have everyone driving by, slowing down and gawking at the most famous man in town, the man who had, in his way, made the town what it was then, shaped so much of what it is still. His closest friends knew how he never wanted to be in a wheelchair, had hated seeing his older sister in one, before she died of polio when he was just 15, and then his mother, Maria, too, who had instilled in him his love of music, who had raised him alone, after her husband died when George was just 7, left them with nothing. His mother, whose decline during those last hard years of her life, left George heartbroken. His friends all saw it. Saw how this man who had built a business empire and shaped a city had changed the way that people lived then, how we live still in no small part. Saw how her death kind of broke him. His friends knew just how unhappy his health made him. Though that week, that morning even, he laughed easily. He seemed, it seemed, something of his old self. He had invited some friends by for coffee and to witness the rewriting of his will. Which admittedly isn't the sunniest invitation, but it was in character for George. He had become a titan of business by being businesslike. Why should end-of-life planning be any different? And he seemed good, they said as they left. George seems good. More upbeat than they'd seen him in a while. Energy was good. Happy to have the company. He seemed good. But they said their goodbyes, not knowing it would be their last. Not knowing that a few hours later, George Eastman would ask his doctor and nurses to clear the room so he could write a note. They found it beside him in his bedroom. Afternoon light threw frost in the windows, after they'd rushed in when they heard the gunshot. And found that George had lain out a sheet on top of his bed before he had lain down, to minimize cleanup. Found that he had taken a gun from his drawer and shot himself in the heart. And found the note. It was direct and to the point. It was, in this way, very George Eastman. It read, "To my friends, my work is done. Why wait?" In those same friends, in the coming days, in their grief, and their relief in their way that George's suffering was over, after the funeral, after thousands lined the streets in the sleeting rain, after the movie theaters in Rochester all dimmed their lights in honor of all George Eastman had done to make the movies what they were, after the bell in Old City Hall, which had been silent then for years, rang out to mark his death, those friends all said the same thing. He died as he lived. Efficiently. The man who would spend the last week of his life dotting I's on his will, who would choose the method and time of that death, who would close the book on his life in that way, one of the most consequential American lives, maybe lives full stop, that was the George they all knew. The one who meticulously cataloged each of the roses in his garden, so he could see which varieties thrived within it. The one who personally oversaw every detail of every safari he took in his retirement. Who would drive everyone crazy with his packing lists and charts and logs, all the checking and rechecking. Just so much just-so-ness. All the time. Those were the things that made George George. Those were the things that made him George Eastman. The George Eastman who prototyped and refined over and over his Kodak portable camera. Who, when his father died and his mother had to take in boarders to keep the family afloat, had to cook for them in their tiny kitchen. George would spend his days working at a bank and spend his nights in that same kitchen, countless nights, getting the formula just right on his dry plate system, the photo processing procedure that would kick off his career, that would build him a lab where he could figure out every little detail, the balance of chemicals, the thickness of celluloid, the spacing of the sprocket holes that would make the flexible film rolls that would make the movie business possible and would make his fortune. Employ so many people in one city that the day he handed out bonuses would become a holiday. His work was done. Why wait? Some of Eastman's biographers focus on his father's sudden death when George was 7 and find within it the origin of his efficiency, his meticulousness. The idea is that such a trauma, such a rupture in your life at such a young age, going from wealth and comfort to having none, from having a father to having none. The idea is that when you lose control, all you want to do is control things. You spend your life controlling things. Maybe you end your life controlling things. But these things are never so simple. And you can change the focus. Can point the camera elsewhere. George Eastman made all that money making sure we could. So instead, let's focus on the ways the life's work of this man who was always in control flew out of it. Because all of it, the dry plate photographic process, the celluloid film spool, the Kodak camera, the Brownie camera, all of the things he invented and oversaw and acquired, all the things he came to control, ceded control to the rest of us. The Kodak camera freed our forebears from having to go to some photo studio to sit stock still while someone mixed some chemicals, charged them a fortune. It freed them from the held pose, the stranger's room, from having a moment so unlike the rest of their lives represent that life forever. George Eastman put the means of production of those most vital of things, our own images, our own histories, in our own hands. And Eastman could go over his books, could study the markets, and foresee how well the Brownie camera was going to sell in the second half of 1919, but he couldn't foresee Instagram influencers in 2019. He could foresee the promise of celluloid motion picture film, how it would allow him to expand production and diversify his product line, but he couldn't foresee Casablanca, or The Harder They Come, or The Hidden Fortress, or Evil Dead 2, or Paris is Burning, or Do the Right Thing, or The Bicycle Ride in Butch Cassidy. George Eastman could sit in his office with his ledgers, dotting I's all day, while you and I could take pictures of the rainbow that flashes in the spray as our brother breaks the plane of a sprinkler on a summer day. This episode of The Memory Palace was produced by me, Nate DeMeo. I get research assistance from Eliza McGraw and engineering assistance from Elizabeth Aubert. This show is a proud member of Radiotopia, a collective of independent podcasts banding together to take on Big Podcast. This particular episode was commissioned by the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival with funding from the New York State Council on the Arts. If you ever want to get in touch with me, you can do so through my website. Send me an email at nate@thememorypalace.us. You can follow me on Twitter and, Facebook at The Memory Palace. Talk to you all again.
Radiotopia.